Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Hello and welcome to the WTF1 podcast. I'm your host, James Coker, along with Ash Vandelay. Hi, Ash.
Hello.
Today we are going to be reviewing the Miami Grand Prix. Not just the Miami Grand Prix, but the entire weekend. We had a busy weekend. We had a sprint race. We had F1 Academy, which we will talk about later this week. But we had a lot going on in Miami. You were there, Ash? How was your
Very
time?
Hot.
Hot?
Yeah, it was fun. It's fun talking to people waiting in lines. They're like, would you rather it be a bajillion degrees with no cloud cover or raining? There's no in between. But, you know, great weather. We had all that racing. A lot of people super excited.
Great weather. It rained the whole time.
Weekend. Oh, kind of rained. It's Miami. It, like, sort of rained, and then it didn't. And then it stopped.
Sure.
And then it was nice and sunny all over again.
Yeah.
Party in the city where the heat is on. I'm sure everyone's so sick of that song from all the creators. That song.
Like you. You said we should do better and use Pitbull instead of playing
Will Mr. Smith. 305 is right there. Enrique Iglesias. I mean, literally right who else? There. Oh, the whole Bad Boys 2 soundtrack. Freaking the movie based in Miami.
Shout
One
out
of
to
Michael Bay's
Bay.
Finest films. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But, my favorite film for sure.
So good. But before we get into this race weekend that just happened in Miami at the Miami International Autodrome, let's talk about a few F1 headlines, shall we?
We shall.
First up, it was reported, was it yesterday or this morning, that a former F1 driver and 24-hour Le Mans winner, Jochen Mass, has passed away at the age of 78. You want to talk a little bit about it?
Yeah, he had a really significant impact that, I mean, he was in Formula One for a bit. He spanned generations. And a lot of people don't get to do that in F1, let alone in a lot of motorsports, right? You mentioned race in Le Mans, won Le Mans, also tour cars. He was an early mentor of Michael Schumacher, teammate of James Hunt. I mean, he had a very profound impact.
And Emerson Fittipaldi.
Yeah, he touched a lot of part of motorsports, and he was just a huge, I think, underrated personally. We don't talk about him or haven't heard about him too much. Formula One chief executive Stefano Domenicali said he had an incredible life at the heart of our sport, was a wonderful person who embraced life and loved Formula One. And a lot of obituaries writing very lovely things, of course, about how great of a person he was just to talk to about motorsports, how much respect he has, of course, for motorsports. So definitely will be missed.
114 entries in his Formula One career, 105 starts, 1 win, 8 podiums. There's a very interesting interview with him on F1 Beyond the Grid from a few years back. Just it's just sort of like a retrospective on his life, not just in Formula One, but in motorsport as a whole. It's a really interesting listen. Would recommend. Next up, it is being rumored that Jack Doohan is going to be replaced with Franco Colapinto very soon, or at very least before the Grand Prix at Imola, which the full name, I believe, is the Formula One AWS Made in Italy de Emilia Romagna Gran Premio. Something along those lines.
Yeah. Yeah, slap that on a banner. They will.
Say that a lot of words. Fast.
So we're saying reported, a little bit rumored. It's been covered by a lot of journalists, so someone has probably let this slip in some way. And also, team principal Ollie Oaks canceled Doohan's media availability post-race in Miami, which doesn't very happen. It doesn't happen often, so we feel confident that he will be replaced by Franco Colapinto for the Imola GP.
I mean, it's a shame, but we've been hearing this rumor before he even started the season. Like, as soon as Franco Colapinto was signed as reserve driver, everyone was like, oh, it's imminent. He's going to be replaced. It might even happen before the season starts. So this is just sort of
everyone. Briatore was like, excuse you, count your days.
I don't think Jack Doohan ever stood a chance. Jack Doohan could have finished in the points in every race, and they would have found an excuse to replace him with Franco Colapinto. IMHO.
Oh, interesting. I don't know about the points thing. if he scored points, maybe that would have been a different story. But yeah, I think he's partially to blame, but I think Alpine, of course, has a larger blame piece of the pie, in my opinion. Colapinto has had this hanging, Doohan has had this hanging over his head since he started about Colapinto replacing him. So imagine having to deal with that constantly. Every time you mess up, you're like, oh, here's my chance. But he's had two lap one exits this year and a bunch of penalties. I mean, has he fully seized the opportunity? People are asking, but I mean, has Alpine, on the other hand, provided him an environment to thrive in? It's just everything was stacked against him.
I think it's a very similar situation to what we see with that second seat at Red Bull. Like, are they providing this driver with an environment in which he can succeed?
This reminds me of, when the whole Piastri contract thing was happening, I forget who said this, maybe it was Laurent Mekies, about how drivers are driven by their egos and there's no loyalty anymore. I was like, there's no way we're having this conversation. Teams don't have loyalty. Everyone's so cutthroat, and it's so intense, and you're arguing that your driver doesn't want to keep a contract.
There's no loyalty either way.
No F1 boss would hesitate to remove you, so why should a driver be scared to leave their contract if they find 100%. A better opportunity?
And what would Oscar Piastri's career be like right now if he had stayed at Alpine?
One of the great things we'll actually never know. Yeah, that he'll never know either.
Like maybe he'd be like finishing in the points and beating out, his teammate in Pierre Gasly or Esteban Ocon, depending on who they kept at that given point in time. But why would he not leave for McLaren, whose trajectory was clearly going up, and stay at a place like Alpine, which at the time was an absolute dumpster fire?
What does this mean for Doohan overall, though? I don't know if he's ever going to become a flip over to a reserve driver or if he'll seek racing opportunities elsewhere. But yeah, it was just an unfortunate set of circumstances, which happens in Formula One a lot.
The speculation is that he will still be employed by Alpine if he chooses to stay. Like, he could stay on as a reserve driver, or he could maybe get moved to one of Alpine's WEC teams and drive endurance, right?
Ooh, I haven't heard about the endurance part, but that would, I mean, if you're a race car driver, you want to race, so.
Yeah, right? I mean, those are transferable skills.
This is the gas pedal also in this car. What a coincidence.
Your steering wheel goes left and right. We'll see what happens. I think it's a shame that he wasn't given more time. I know we're saying this as if the swap already happened, but I do think it's a shame. If this swap happens, it's a shame he only had six races. Mm-hmm. Next up, Audi has announced an organizational restructure ahead of F1's arrival in 2026.
Yeah, how fun for Audi and all the stuff that has happened with them in the past years, just to even get to this point. Audi Formula One engine chief Adam Baker has departed the program by mutual agreement, so quoted in articles. Mm. Audi has revealed as part of its latest F1 restructuring, the CEO role will now be eliminated as part of the reorganization. Stefan Dreyer will continue to head the power unit development as CTO. And then Baker's responsibilities will be assumed by Christian Foyer, who is now the COO as well.
Do you get chased up Audi by Mattia?
No, I don't think so. I mean, I don't know.
Sitting there drinking wine, being like, I don't like you. Get out of here. Scram!
I mean, they gave up all the other racing programs to do this. And like this, the headlines of not good proportions keep coming out of... you know, having the power unit potential delays. That was rumored last year, and now Adam Baker departing the program. I love their choice of words. Departed the program under mutual agreement. It's just all this stuff, and it's like, okay, you know, maybe you should just go back to sports car racing where we wanted you in the first place.
To quote Kim Mulkey,
it's a lot of money.
To quote LSU, legendary LSU coach Kim Mulkey, he's no longer with us. He's no longer with the team.
Absolutely. Good luck, Adam Baker, in your next role.
Next up, over the weekend, it was reported that Miami Grand Prix will be extended and will be on the Formula One calendar until 2041. I was surprised that extension was that big. Especially given that Miami might be underwater in 2041.
Someone call Sebastian Vettel. The president of the Miami GP, Tyler Epp, said he revealed the sponsorship revenue for 2025 event has reached an all-time high thus far. I mean, it has been very long. This GP has been in the calendar, but so far for 2025, all-time high. Someone also asked him that question, James, about why you would renew for 10 years now, like already. And he said, if you look at the past 5 months and what has happened to this franchise, referring to Formula One, you'll know why we renewed. And some folks were wondering if he was talking, because he said the word franchise, and they're like, oh, is he talking about the Miami Dolphins franchise or the Hard Rock Stadium? And we think he was referring to Formula One, as in Formula One is swapping races on the calendar a different number of years, and things are changing. So I think Miami, to solidify themselves and to stay on the calendar, just signed it as quickly as possible and, you know, shook some babies, kissed some hands to make sure they stay on the calendar indefinitely.
I mean, given the state of the world, the country and the world, and when I see something as extended to like 2041, I think of that Jessica Lange meme from American Horror Story where she says, there isn't going to be a swimming pool, you stupid little slut. There isn't going to be a Grand Prix.
Well, they have it for a long time. Some fans were not happy about it on social media per usual, but
I will say, from like a fan watching at home, Miami so far has not really given us an exciting race. Just my opinion.
Yeah, there was an Autosport graphic that came out, which was actually a little misleading about this whole thing. Okay, so the graphic was how the United States has held the most F1 races.
What?
I forget, it was 80 races, yeah. So they've had Watkins Glen, Indianapolis, Circuit of the Americas, Long Beach, Detroit, Miami, Phoenix, Caesars Palace, Sebring, Las Vegas, Fair Park, Riverside, and Sebring. Sebring, the first ever, yeah, United States Grand Prix. So I think the United States also has the most tracks that have held an F1 race. However, that statistic is weird.
That's not a flex, though. Because in the 50s,
Indianapolis were in F1 races. There was world championship races, but not F1. And then when you get into like the murky depths of like 1952, 1953 world championships, they're running F2 rules, with the exception of the Indianapolis 500 also. Mm-hmm. So it gets a bit confusing about what they're deeming as holding the most, or like having the most
Grand Prix. Saying your country has had the most tracks in Formula One isn't the flex you think it is. It means you have never found a track that is good enough to be a permanent home for said Grand Prix.
Well, you would take that argument a little bit differently. So the having the most Grand Prix held, or most races held, I don't know what terminology they were using in the graphic, is interesting, because then people will complain the United States has 3 currently, when by far United States citizens spend the most on sports, merchandise, sports, capital, tickets, things like that. We spend more than the next average consumer by at least like 25% on like sports. So they just want our money too. And they're like, oh, because they're using this, I think, graphic to show that we've always, like, the United States has always been there. But then to your point, right, Caesar's Palace is not something I would really want to brag about in the history of my country holding F1 races.
The Dallas Grand Prix ran once. And that was the year I was born, in Dallas, in 1984.
So this is your fault.
Okay. This is my fault. That whole race is a very interesting race, and we could have a whole podcast just about that. It was a disaster. That's also the race where famously Ayrton Senna hit the wall and claimed the wall had moved, and apparently it had. The cement block had moved out a few millimeters. It was that famous moment in his career. But yeah.
Yeah, lot of media press around the whole Miami Grand Prix. I don't know if you noticed all the stories before, during, and after about what a success. Love coming to Miami. And I was like, this is... Not like a single critique. As someone, as we all know, airs grievances. Not like one little thing, like the Ubering situation, nothing. Everything ESPN, is fine. Everything's great.
ESPN did a puff piece calling it America's Monaco.
Oh, I hated that so much.
And they prefaced it with being like, okay, hear me out. I know it's like very early to say that. I know it's like, that's a bold statement to make, but this, that, and the third. And I'm like, no. It looked fun. There was a lot of cool brand activations. There were a lot of celebrities. It looked like very fun and flashy. But the racing is not a real street circuit. It's not a permanent track. It's the parking lot of Joe Robbie Stadium / Hard Rock Stadium. The circuit layout doesn't allow for a lot of passing. And with the unless you have like an example like the sprint race where there was some rain, and that threw a wrench into the thing and made things a little exciting, it's going to be a boring race on that circuit layout.
Yeah, I do wonder if anyone has read, and if you can let me and James know, if you read any pieces that seem pretty neutral. Like, don't get me wrong, like I think as James said, there were good things, but I think there's things that you can fairly say, like, hey, this still has some stuff to work on. And I've just been reading, wow, this is the best. America loves this. We all love this. This is just up the road from Charlotte. And I was like, this is like 18 hours away. What are you talking about?
I think the business of journalism now is journalists get access to events to promote it, not to give a honest critique about it.
Yeah, but I think you can give an honest critique and not be rude. Or I guess hurt anyone's feelings. You can just be like, hey, I didn't like paying $100 for an Uber every single time. I had to get out of here and spend an hour in Miami traffic. Maybe. You know, I think there's some things they could. Yeah, you bring a good point. Well, anyway, we're going to talk about this for the next how many years?
We'll be talking about it's going to be 2040. And I'm going to be 56 years old talking about the Miami Grand Prix.
Yeah, gird your loins, everyone. Hearing our voices till 2041 at minimum.
I really hope I'm not hosting a podcast at age 56.
You have no choice. In fun news, Lewis Hamilton, as we were recording, because it is May 5th, Monday, May 5th, Lewis Hamilton is the chair of the Met Gala, which is today. And the theme is tailored for you, with an event honoring and exploring the fashion narrative and history of Black Dandy. So that it focuses on Black Dandyism. Yeah, it's an aesthetic and cultural tradition rooted in defiance, elegance, and self-definition. This allows this year's Met Gala to be more than a fundraiser. It's a reclamation for many people. And the title for this year's Costume Institute Spring Exhibit is titled Superfine, Tailoring for Black Style.
I'm excited.
It's Lewis Hamilton has had a long-standing relationship with Anna Wintour, who's the leads the Met Gala with her position in Vogue, and the Institute, Costume Institute Spring Exhibits that come out every year. It's to raise money for this exhibit. That's what this is. And we know tables are very expensive. Lewis Hamilton, I believe, what was this? This was fairly recent in the past 3 years. I remember he bought a table, which is a lot of money, and he bought for his guests. He had other Black fashion designers and artists to come join him for the Met Gala. So he's had a really good relationship with Anna Wintour, and he's always been invited to the Met Gala, and now he's one of the chairs to make this possible, which is really, really cool.
Yeah, that's one thing I really respect about Lewis Hamilton is he constantly uses his platform to spotlight and highlight other like young creatives, not just like in fashion, but like he's always using his platform to try to help spotlight other young talent in various.
And this is the conversations we have that he transcends Formula One, right? Like he's at the, he's the chair of the Met Gala. I don't know how many F1 drivers can say that. Right. So it's really cool. I will be watching. Right. It's really fun to be watching and judging my pajamas.
Yeah. You're wearing sweats. Cost more. And you're,
It's exactly. Like when guys are watching Formula One and they're like, oh, you should have made that quarter. It's like, yeah, totally me driving my 2017 Toyota Tacoma down 77 in Charlotte. Yeah, judging it's like
you drive a Chrysler Town and Country and you're trying to tell some Formula One driver how to navigate a chicane. Even if you think it's a bit overhyped, AI is suddenly everywhere, from customer service to Formula Auto Racing. If it's not in your industry yet, it's coming fast. But AI needs a lot of speed and computing power. So how do you compete without costs spinning out? Time to race to the next generation of the cloud, Oracle Cloud Infrastructure, or OCI. OCI is a blazing fast and secure platform for your infrastructure, database, application development, plus all your AI and machine learning workloads. OCI costs 50% less for compute and 80% less for networking. That's a lot of prize money. Thousands of businesses have already upgraded to OCI, including Vodafone, Thomson Reuters, and Suno AI. Right now, Oracle is offering to cut your current cloud bill in half if you move to OCI. For new U.S. customers with minimum financial commitment, offer ends May 31st. See if your company qualifies for this special offer at oracle.com/WTF. That's oracle.com/WTF. All right. Any other headlines, or should we get into the race weekend?
Let's get into the race weekend.
Let's do it. All right, folks, we are briefly going to talk about the sprint race because Ash and I still think they're bullshit. However, we had Andrea Kimi Antonelli on sprint pole. You go, Glenn Coco. Very impressive, very exciting. It was apt, especially since he had a documentary coming out on Netflix today, May 5th, titled The Seat, which you saw. You went to the premiere for, yeah?
Oh, yeah. Yes, that was the documentary is pretty short. I think it's a little less than an hour, but it's okay. Really nice to get to know about Kimi Antonelli. It's obviously, I think we mentioned this last time, it's about the WhatsApp messages and the WhatsApp, using the WhatsApp app to, you know, have a call with him to announce that he's becoming let him know that he's becoming an F1 driver with him and his dad. So that's really nice. Just messages about the team and how they've kind of coached him and gotten to this point and whatnot. So it was a nice wholesome behind the scenes. You get to learn a little bit more about his family, a little bit about him, which is great because you know, sometimes we miss out on that kind of stuff. So yeah, it was a nice piece. I liked it. It was funny. There was a Q&A after with some folks from the documentary, especially Kimi Antonelli and Toto Wolff, and they were joking because Laura Winters was the host, was the MC, and she was saying how WhatsApp is just so popular everywhere else but the United States.
Yeah,
and Kimi was like, "Yeah, I was explaining this to someone, and they didn't know what WhatsApp was." He's right. Like, "This is so weird. This is the only we don't." He's like, "What do you guys use? What's it called again?" He's like, "Was it iMessage?" And I don't think I've ever called my texting app in the United States iMessage. I just tell people I'm going to text them, and I just use iMessage. Yeah. So yeah, everywhere else uses WhatsApp. I talk to my family in Poland, right? Only through WhatsApp anyway. Call them through WhatsApp.
Right.
So it is funny trying to like break into the United States, but everyone else is like, "Oh, this makes sense."
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in the United States, we're like, "Why? What's the point of this? What's WhatsApp?" Yeah.
If you want to check out The Seat, it is currently on Netflix. It premiered today, May 5th.
#. This is not sponsored by them. This is something.
Not sponsored by them. We're just saying just you can check it out.
Kimi Antonelli is the youngest driver to secure a Formula One pole position in any race format during the Miami Grand Prix sprint qualifying. Once held by Sebastian Vettel, this is becoming baseball stats, because if you noticed in that sentence, they put in any race format, not just, you know, like qualifying in the race. This is specifically the sprint, but a pole is a pole, so we'll give it to Kimi. And it should not be surprising to anyone that he's a decent driver. I think Toto Wolff has been talking him up, as we've mentioned on previous podcasts, and just like his record from before coming to Formula One. So it's pretty fun to see him do so well.
Yeah, he's living up to the hype. Even though someone mentioned it, I forget who, that he would not be able to drink in Miami if he had made it onto the podium, which I thought was very funny. They probably would have just let him do it anyway, right? What are the Dade County Sheriff's Department going to come up and arrest him for drinking some Moet on the podium?
No, they took photos with everyone. They got to be cool with it. Be like, yeah, as long as he's not driving afterwards or doing anything crazy, we're fine. Yeah,
as long as he's not driving afterwards, you can drive before. But let's talk about the sprint race. We had Kimi Antonelli on pole. Charles Leclerc crashed on his way to the grid. It was raining or just had rained, so there was a lot of standing water. We then had a poor start for Kimi Antonelli, immediately lost his lead. He claims that he was pushed off. I don't know about that. But we had a McLaren 1-2 in the sprint. Lando Norris P1, Oscar Piastri P2. with Lewis Hamilton in her Ferrari P3, which was a nice surprise. Yes.
You're saying he wasn't pushed off by Oscar Piastri? You're saying he wasn't just doing it? Maybe not like, he wasn't like shoved. He wasn't doing, there was no argy-bargying. Well, like, but there was.
But Piastri didn't get a penalty for it.
Doesn't mean it's right.
I almost said Piastri didn't get a penalty for it.
A penalty. I love it. That's exactly what we're calling it. I love it. A penalty when he gets
This
is the same as the race. When with the Max and Lando Norris thing, it's like first lap, you're more okay with it. And this is the whole thing that people just dislike about. Yes, I think it was hard racing. I did think he didn't leave any room to do side-by-side stuff. Funny enough, with the documentary, was after the sprint race. So the Q&A, Toto Wolff said that he jokingly said, let me just reiterate that, he jokingly said that he gave Kimi Antonelli full permission to push back against Oscar Piastri next time.
So, oh, wow. Okay.
All right. But I also think he's serious. I was like, I think Toto Wolff just wants to see a penalty so they can go to the FIA and be like, oh, you penalize this, but not this? Make it make sense.
That's fair. That's fair. But the sprint race, I think, was actually exciting. Even though I'm not a big sprint race fan due to the rain, I thought it had a lot of hot action. Had a delayed start. You rarely see strategy come into play in a sprint race, but we had exactly that in the Miami Sprint. You had every car start on inters or intermediate wet weather tires for the start of the sprint. This was kind of a meh race, in my opinion, until like around laps like 10, 11, 12, and when it became like absolute mayhem. And then you wrote, no, don't do this. We're running into the NASCAR problem.
Yeah, you did this also with Australia. You're like, this was such a great race because of all the chaos. I was like, no.
Yeah, it was a good race because of the chaos. It was a good race because of the chaos.
But it's like that's not the only thing that distinguishes a good race. Sorry, I'm trying to say...
It's not the only thing, but it can be a thing.
Old school here. It could be a thing. And I guess in Miami, where we complain there's not a lot of passing, not a lot of stuff happening, chaos means things have happened. Therefore, it should be interesting. But I don't want it to turn into a NASCAR problem where people will complain or say that the race wasn't good, but they're really talking about how there wasn't like a crazy incident, then it didn't cause a yellow flag, and then they were all bunched back up together. And I was like, ugh. Just because there isn't an incident doesn't mean it was boring, I should say.
Race without an incident and still have it be exciting, but I'm just saying it was exciting because of the mayhem.
I just like to make that clear, that when there is no mayhem, it is still interesting.
All right. Well, I'm going to talk real quick about a little bit of the mayhem. I'm saying mayhem as if it's like ham that you eat in May as opposed to mayhem. around laps 10, 11, 12, the track was really drying up. So you had Yuki Tsunoda, I believe, was the first to pit, switch to mediums. Then lap 12, Hamilton, Stroll, and Sainz pitted. Hamilton went to softs. Lap 13, you had Max Verstappen with the unsafe release in the pit lane, making contact with Kimi Antonelli. Kimi absolutely yeets Max's front wing. It just shatters all over the place. I think we can all agree that Max and or Red Bull was in the wrong there. He was assessed a 10-second time penalty for that. And I don't think that was Max's fault because I think the team released him from the pit box.
Yes.
I believe on the radio Verstappen was like, oh, come on, guys. Like, I think he was upset that he was released.
Mm-hmm.
So you were sitting with someone?
Yeah, I was sitting with someone. They asked me why that he would get a penalty when the team released him. And I was sitting in Miami. You kind of remember a lot of people are just casual fans. And this is becoming now in my head, like slightly what the Indy 500 has it. I say, quote unquote, not an issue, but quote unquote, people just show up for the Indy 500 and don't watch IndyCar, right? Like the Indy 500 is a spectacle in itself. So a lot of people that I've met who were talking to me and like asking me questions about the race, I realized they've only been to the Miami GP and don't watch Formula One outside of the Miami GP. So someone was asking why he didn't get a penalty, why he would get the penalty and not the team. And, you know, first of all, it's a team sport and you want to punish the whole team in that aspect during the race because of what happened. Right? Like, if they fine them $5,000, like, what is that going to do for Kimi Antonelli and Mercedes? Not that that punishment is always equal or helps because it's already happened, but $5,000 to a team is $5,000, like, whatever. Especially a team like Red Bull, So you want to do a timing issue because it affected other people's races and you wanted to, something to affect your driver's race as well. So, yeah, and it totally fucked over Antonelli because of
he wasn't able to get to the pit box because of it, and he had to he wasn't able to change tires, and then I think he had to go around another time. He missed
the pit box. And to talk about Hamilton going to softs, he actually made that strategy call for himself. Because I think they're going to put him on mediums, and on the radio he said, "No, softs, please."
Well, I'm. Why wouldn't you go to softs if it was a sprint race and you only had six laps left?
Dude, I'm not behind the.
Were they worried it'd be too slick? Were they worried that it would be too slick?
Potentially.
Okay. Lap 13, Sainz got a puncture. Lap 14, Piastri pits for mediums. Lap 14. Lewis Hamilton passes Max Verstappen. And then on lap 15, Fernando Alonso crashes into the wall at turn 12. You might say that Liam Lawson yeeted him into the barriers.
Some people might say that, yeah.
Yeah. Just gave him the boot. Safety car deployed. Lando pits and switches to slicks and gets ahead of the safety car. It's a theme here at Miami for Lando Norris getting out of the safety car. But so Lando Norris wins once again with a little help of the safety car. Piastri P2, Hamilton P3. I thought it was exciting for a sprint race. Usually sprint races are boring, but the chaos of the weather made it enjoyable, in my opinion, even though you will disagree.
It was enjoyable. But not just because of the chaos. Okay, anyway. Post-race interviews confused me a little bit. Hamilton was saying that they were kind of caught off by the rain. Some drivers saying they were surprised by the rain, didn't expect it to come during the sprint race. And I was like, we're all watching the same weather report.
Yeah.
What do you mean you're surprised? Also, this is Miami in May.
Yeah.
At the time you're racing.
Right.
I'm just, what do you mean it threw you guys by surprise? But, there was a lot of standing water beforehand. There was a lot of water during. So, yeah, rain the great equalizer. I love it when it rains during an F1 race.
Hondo P. Let's get to the Grand Prix qualifying, shall we? Notable drivers knocked out in Q2, Isaac Hadjar and Lewis Hamilton. Yuki Tsunoda made an appearance in Q3. Yugo Yuki also. Both Williams made it into Q3, as did Esteban Ocon of Haas. In qualifying, we had Max Verstappen on pole, Lando Norris P2, missing pole by just 0.06 of a second, Kimi Antonelli P3, Piastri P4, Russell P5. On to the race, to the Grand Prix. Before we get to the race, we got to talk about the driver's parade and how cool it was.
I loved it.
That was the highlight of the weekend. In the driver's parade, we had these life-size Lego cars that were used that were two-seaters. I think it's probably the best activation I've ever seen in Formula One. Shout out to Chief Commercial Officer of Formula One, Emily Prazer, for making this happen. I saw them over the course of the weekend, like on display. I did not realize you could drive them. I did not realize they were operating cars. Did you know that you could, they actually could move?
No.
Okay. But according to this article from Emily Selick at motorsport.com, these life-size Lego builds are nearly a one-for-one scale, containing almost 400,000 bricks each. They each weigh about 1,000 kilograms. Over 22,000 hours of collective effort from a 26-person team of designers, engineers, and master Lego builders went into building this fleet of cars. And I got to tell you, it was so much fun watching this driver's parade and watching these F1 drivers drive these Lego cars that like topped out, I think, at like 20 miles per hour. They weren't going very fast. But I don't think I've ever seen F1 drivers have this much joy doing anything. They were so happy. They just looked like little kids the entire time. And we're just like laughing uncontrollably. Like it was very fun to watch.
George Russell, at the end of the race, was asked what the best part of the race itself was. And he said it was actually the Lego race before. Like he didn't want to talk about what happened during the race. He's like, I want to keep talking about these Legos. It's funny, like, it was like, yeah, this was so much work, but the drivers loved it. They like don't want to do it again. Meanwhile, all the fans loved it. There's a video of Max Verstappen. It's just what, like a 5 second clip, 6 seconds. It's so short. But he's gently rear-ending the car in front of him, the Lego car in front of him. It's already amassed over 21 million views.
That's wild. That's so funny.
It was just so fun. They were having fun, and that's what makes it.
Yeah, they were having so much fun. It was really interesting to see them just, like, have, like, this moment of pure joy. And what, like, is, like, yeah, it's a sport or whatever, but, like, they're there to work. They're there to compete. They're usually, like, locked in, and they were just all, like, acting like little children right before they're supposed to.
This is
to
the
race.
Best thing that Lego probably has ever done marketing-wise, because this is the point of Lego, right? You just feel, not even like a kid, but your creativity, you're having a good time.
Yeah.
You're enjoying the Lego thing that you've built. Like, this is genius.
Yeah. It was great. I love it. And that brings me to my next point. These should be the cars that they race in Monaco.
I second the motion.
The motion is passed.
Motion is passed. Done.
Also, what was very funny, I don't know if you saw any pictures of the aftermath of the Lego cars after the driver's parade. They were, like, destroyed because they, like, they're using them as bumper cars, and they're all scuffed up. They're all missing pieces. It was very, very funny.
Yeah, they were bump drafted on the track. It was great.
Yeah, it was very NASCAR coded. We also had some special liveries this weekend. Visa Cash App Racing Bulls was all pink. I thought it was a sleigh. Ferrari's half blue Frankenfuck was a nay. You know, they'll say it was a tribute to North American racing teams. If it really was that, they should have gone like full navy blue and white. It was really just to accommodate the HP logo, who is the title partner of the team. I thought the car was so ugly.
We are blaming HP, and there are moments we absolutely should, but at the same time, I feel like this might have been a Ferrari problem, because they're the ones who don't want to let go of the red. Because the blue in the North America part of the sides was the North America Ferrari team rebelling against Enzo Ferrari. So that wasn't like anything. I think Ferrari was like, oh yeah, we should be like, yeah, we remember those times. Good times. So I think this is also like a Ferrari miss, less of an HP miss, because they just want to keep the traditional Ferrari red in the car. But right. Visa Cash App Racing Bulls did great. I love the pink.
Shout out to Visa Cash App Racing Bulls. We love it. We also had Mercedes AMG Patronus race suits, which for me is going to be a no for me, dog. You said you liked them, though. I thought they were ugly. I joked that it was giving divorced dad who just bought a motorcycle.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah.
I thought it was very Adidas. I feel like it made sense.
Some people said they looked like jockeys. The way
some people said they looked like those tampon design boxes. I like them.
Yeah. All right. Great. Love it.
They got Toto Wolff to wear a T-shirt out of his like button-up collar.
That was surprising.
It was like seeing a teacher outside of school. That was so strange.
Yeah, it's always awkward.
They had a great skateboarding activation video short with like Toto Wolff and a Mercedes sports car and some skateboarders, some athletes. I was like, this is sick. They did a great show. I think Adidas had a lot of fun. I think we're starting to get used to the Miami activations and trying to find like a nice in between going to quote-unquote American sports, right? Like the driver intros we talked about last time. To some activations, maybe some videos now. So like Lego crushed it. I think the Adidas videos, regardless of whether we like their race suits, like I liked Dorian Paul, her livery for F1 Academy, which was this kind of a similar homage to the race suits we saw for F1. So yeah, I think they're learning. They had George give a hot lap to his partner, Carmen, and she was asking him questions, but it was really funny because he would obviously just be a little butt head while, you know, yeeting across the corners while she's trying to interview him for Vanity Fair or something. Mm-hmm. So I thought that was really funny. Yeah, they did a great job.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
League's Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning League's Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the Crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. League's Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.
Before we get into storylines, race results. Oscar Piastri, P1. Lando Norris, P2. George Russell, P3. We had 4 DNFs. Jack Doohan, Ollie Bearman, Liam Lawson, and Gabriel Bortoleto. Liam Lawson was out due to floor damage from his contact with Jack Doohan at the beginning of the race. Doohan had a puncture. Ollie Bearman and Bortoleto both had power unit issues. Let's get into storylines. First up, McLaren. We had a McLaren 1-2 both in the sprint and a Grand Prix. Like, as a whole, for McLaren as a team, incredible weekend. Zach Brown must be elated. They were so dominant, especially like in the Grand Prix where they ended up beating George Russell in P3 by like over 30 seconds. But, you know, Lando Norris, of course, was like clearly upset at the end of the Grand Prix. Yes, he won the sprint race, got P2 in the Grand Prix, but, you know, was really trying to use this race to eat into Oscar Piastri's lead in the driver standings. Max held him up for a good portion of the race, didn't really give him an opportunity to catch up with Piastri towards the end of the Grand Prix. But I will say, I want to give props to Lando Norris for how he handled himself. He clearly was upset, but like tried to save face. And you disagree with me on this, but I think he was doing his best to be a team player and be happy for the team given the result. But he clearly was upset, and you could see it in his face.
Mm-hmm. He, in the post-race flatbed transportation to the podium situation, whatever was going on over there, he was saying how it's only Verstappen's fault for not getting himself to the podium. It's always crash or be crash with him. Norris had nothing, like, couldn't have done anything else. And while he's saying this, Piastri's face in the background is really interesting as he's reacting to it. He's like, oh, okay. So, yeah, I think, but, like, here's the thing. He wasn't 100% correct, but he also wasn't 100% wrong. I think people just have gray areas. We tell drivers to be more honest, and then when we do in this situation, we tell them to, like, how dare you say that, blah, blah, blah. Do I disagree with him on some points that he made in that post-race flatbed transportation interview? Sure. But overall, I appreciated that he was honest, and I could see what he was thinking there. And yeah, is he wrong that Max is crash or be crash? Like, no.
Yeah. I also remember, like, right, it was very weird right after the race, Zach Brown made Lando take a selfie with him and Oscar Piastri, and he like clearly didn't want to do it. But Piastri was dominant, now has a 16-point lead in the standings. This must have been a very hard pill for Lando Norris to swallow as Piastri starts to extend his lead in the driver standings.
Yeah, and more wins now with than Lando Norris, of course. And I believe in 82 less races was the stat.
Wow. Yeah. And, of course, there is the caveat, of course, and we've talked about this before, that for many years, Lando Norris did not have a great car at McLaren. And Oscar came in when McLaren was in this upward trajectory and was able to take advantage of that. But still, yeah. More Grand Prix wins than Lando Norris. That's got to be hard. Then we saw Oscar Piastri do the gritty, which was like, I feel like very out of character for him. We usually don't see much of a celebration or anything like that for him. That apparently was, he lost a bet with Minnesota Vikings wide receiver Justin Jefferson. He told Justin Jefferson during a media event that if he won the Grand Prix, he would do the gritty, which Justin Jefferson is famous for.
Yeah, I Googled it when you wrote this, and I was like, how does he even know him? But yeah, it was the media event, Hot Laps, and Jefferson was quoted saying, no one has ever done it in racing, you'll be the first. So Piastri said he'll, yeah, like as you said, we'll do it for him if he wins. And I like that. I think I like showing a little bit of personality that he just, he kept his promise, which, I mean, we love a person who does that. And
I love that. He's widowy. He's widowy doing DeGuidi and Pac Flamme. But great battle between Verstappen and Piastri between laps 11 and 13. I thought this was like really exciting. And then, of course, we saw the battles between Verstappen and Norris later in the race were also really exciting.
Yeah, I love watching Piastri. When he keeps attacking, he doesn't let anything faze him. His radios are also very calm, but kind of how he put pressure on Max. Max made a mistake, took advantage of it, got P1. I absolutely love watching Piastri race. And I do also love Verstappen's radio. Like, he's battling between Piastri and Norris, but he's giving feedback about the brakes and how his car's handling in the most calm, like he's not even battling anyone while he's doing this. He's just like, yeah, these brakes are fucked, aren't they? He's just so chill about this whole situation around him. And I think that's kind of how you have to be.
Yeah. But Oscar Piastri took the lead on lap 13 and really never looked back. Incredibly dominant win from Oscar Piastri. Oscar Piastri also props to McLaren for having McLaren Racing's chief marketing officer, Luis McEwen, on the podium to represent the team. I thought that was a nice moment.
Yeah, she's the 11th woman to stand on the F1 podium.
The 11th woman out of how many podiums? Other storylines. Mercedes, another podium for George Russell, Mr. Reliable. He is now fourth in the driver standings with 93 points. Mercedes also has a considerable lead in second place in the constructor standings with 141 points over Red Bull in third with 105. The timing of that virtual safety car on lap 30 really helped Russell get ahead of Verstappen. It was close with Russell like barely coming out of the pit exit. I don't know if you remember that moment, but it was pretty close, and I was just like, and then we'll talk about this later with Red Bull, but we thought maybe that Mercedes was going to get assessed like a 5-second time penalty, which would have promoted Max to the podium, but that ended up not happening. Another solid weekend for Mercedes.
Yeah, and they're still, like you mentioned, second in the constructor, so you just got to keep consistency wins championships. I'm going to keep saying this because Russell keeps crushing it, and Kimi's learning quickly, so I love it.
Yeah. Moving on, Ferrari finished P7 and P8. They just did not have the fight. Unfortunately, the Ferraris did not have the pace to fight with Mercedes and Checks Notes Williams, which was a little surprising. There was a lot of chatter back and forth on the radio from Lewis Hamilton about swapping positions, a lot of frustration, a lot of snark. You know, he told the team that it was not good teamwork. He told them to have a tea break while you're at it in regards to their slow decision-making in regards to race strategy. When this was happening, Lewis was on mediums. Leclerc was on the hards. Lewis thought he had the pace to pass Kimi Antonelli, who I think at the time was like 6 seconds ahead of Leclerc, and Leclerc was not really closing the gap on it. Lewis wanted to swap to see if he had the pace to catch up to Antonelli, and it took them like, I think, 3 or 4 laps to finally make the decision to swap the cars. And by that time, it is assumed that he had cooked those tires so much that he had lost his window of opportunity to be able to catch up to Kimi Antonelli.
Yeah, it was an interesting... F1 TV said this as well. You're not fighting for a podium. You're not fighting for P1, P2, P3. You're back there, 7-8. Every position matters. Mm-hmm. And you're like, I don't know if we should... Like, what's good? Just swap. Just do it. Like, yeah, we're checking. We'll get back to you. Like, are you asking someone for permission? Just... What's the issue here?
I know there's... I'm always going to be a spotlight and a microscope on Ferrari because they are Ferrari, but they seem to be famous for their inability to make decisions on the spot in races. And that just continued at this race. And then, you know, eventually Lewis wasn't able to close the gap and they swapped the cars back, but Hamilton was clearly upset. And
they're very risk averse.
Yes.
And they're very reactive instead of proactive. They just don't want to take risk. And it's, and some might say you need to take them off, specifically in Formula One, if you're going to do stuff like this. So they're playing it too safe. And that might be the issue with the car as well, that they're not doing anything crazy to change what needs to be changed, little by little, trying to figure it out. But because of that, they're probably going to lose a lot of points to get up there.
For sure. Regardless, there were some exciting battles between the Ferraris and Carlos Sainz on lap 34, and then also towards the end of the race. There were some exciting battles like up and down the grid during the course of this race, and which leads us into our next storyline, which is Williams. Great weekend for Williams Racing. Double points for Williams. Great result for Alastair Williams Racing and James Vowles. But the result did not come without a little bit of drama. We had a P5 finish for Alex Albon. Carlos Sainz finished P9. Sainz and Albon were battling and racing in P6 and 7 during the beginning of the race. And then Sainz suffered some damage with contact that was made with Alex Albon. Sainz clearly was not happy, especially when Alex Albon defied team orders. Williams instructed Alex Albon to keep Sainz in DRS to help his race, but Albon defied team orders and sped away and eventually overtook Kimi Antonelli and finished in P5. After the race, team radio from Sainz said, "A strong race, a lot of things to learn. Yeah, some things to discuss. Yeah, guys, that is not how I go racing. I don't care. I've lost a lot of confidence here on everything."
Yeah. Something similar happened to Carlos Sainz when he was in Ferrari, racing with Leclerc all the time. So he's going to start looking out for himself and have to become essentially a quote-unquote selfish teammate.
Yeah.
To get what he needs.
It'd be interesting to be a fly on the wall in that debrief. And also be interesting how... And we're probably not going to see this publicly, but how privately James Vowles is handling this between the two drivers, because you have to be so diplomatic and delicate about something like this.
Well, Sainz helped in previous races. I mean, like, helped with Alex Albon. So it's just, it probably just stings even a little bit more because you've done that previously already, and he won't even do that for you in this current race. So,
for sure. Yeah. Moving on to Red Bull. Exciting battles between laps 17 and 19 between Max Verstappen and Lando Norris. Red Bull thought they were possibly going to get Max Verstappen promoted to P3 by making the case that George Russell did not slow down under a yellow flag. According to Mark Manbryans of Motorsport.com, stewards rejected Red Bull's protests. From the stewards' decision issued later Sunday evening, they said it was evident from the onboard footage as well as from the telemetry that car 63 lifted the throttle when passing the yellow flag zone and was considerably slower than the regular racing speed, but the absolute speed while passing through the yellow flag zone increased slightly. I know there was also an image, I don't know if you saw this, of Toto and Christian arguing about it or having a heated discussion about it in the paddock after the race.
Oh, was Toto upset that Christian Horner did that?
Maybe.
Protested?
Yeah.
I don't care. That's like what a good team principal does is you snitch. Sure. I mean, we talk about this all the time. Like, you just get the advantage when you can. But to argue, depending on what the argument was, if Christian Horner got into Toto Wolff's face, and he's like, "I can't believe your driver did that. That's just a little too much. Like, who cares?" FIA will review. Move on.
GP told Max on the radio towards the end of the race, "Make sure you stay within 5 seconds of George." And Max was like, "Why?" And GP said, "Just do it, please." And that's clearly wise, because they were going to protest Russell and were hoping that Max was going to promote it. He didn't. But we also had a points finish for Yuki Tsunoda in P10. So go, Yuki. Do we want to talk about Aston Martin at all?
Sad. Dead last. Unfortunate.
Yeah, dead last. Both Aston Martins were dead last among the cars that finished. I don't know what's going on with them. You know, you look at them in 2023, you had Fernando Alonso racking up a handful of podiums, you know, finished, was it P2 in Monaco? And it looked like they had this upward trajectory that they were going to get closer to the top four teams and sort of move away from the midfield. And something's just happened where they've just really been struggling.
Yeah, he's unfortunately got involved in some incidents beginning of the year. Fernando Alonso said that he's hopeful for Imola that they can take a step forward, which is super necessary now. But the unfortunate thing is that everyone else is also doing the same thing. Sure. So he's hoping Aston Martin can really bring those aerodynamic packages that you need for Imola, which we'll preview when we talk about it in a couple weeks' time.
Yeah. Also, post-race, that putting the drivers on that flatbed and giving them like a tour of the track, like they like our paddock club ticket owner like holders, was very weird. It felt like they were just on this flatbed and like an F1 expert host was telling them about the track and about the history, the long 4-year history of the Miami Grand Prix. Lando Norris clearly didn't want to be there, and then they had to go to a second location. Then they had to go to a cool down room. It was just, I saw what they were trying to do. They were trying to sort of emulate what happened in Vegas, where they got like into a Rolls Royce and then got taken to interviews and then got taken to a cool down room. But it was weird. Yeah.
Yeah. I think also, especially in the Miami heat, like it's not a Las Vegas night race. Like you're sweaty, you're tired, and you're like, dude, I got to go on this flatbed now in the heat as well. I'm not even getting the air. Or any cooling? Yeah. I'm trying to chat. I do love that George Russell again was so nonchalant, and they asked him, Jensen Button, excuse me, asked him what his favorite part of the race was, and he goes, the Lego race. Like he's still, like that's his first immediate answer with a big smile. So, yeah.
That was hilarious. But yeah, I think that about wraps it up. Is there anything else you want to say, Ash?
What would you rate it on a scale of 1 to 10?
What? I give it a 6.5.
Okay.
How about you?
I always go with like a standard 7.
Yeah. I almost said 7. So yeah. That, folks, that was the 2025 Formula One Crypto.com Miami Grand Prix race review. We hope you enjoyed it. I know I enjoyed getting to talk about it with the incredibly knowledgeable Ash Vandelay. This has been the WTF1 podcast. We will be back later this week talking about F1 headlines. We might have an update about that Alpine seat. It's very possible that they're going to announce Jack Doohan being replaced by Franco Colapinto. Maybe not. We'll see. We also want to talk about a lot of stuff that happened last week in the motorsport. We're talking IndyCar, NASCAR, Formula E, European Le Mans Series, F1 Academy. So please join us later this week where we talk about all the other motorsport series that happened last weekend, as well as F1 headlines happening this week. Thanks so much for listening, and I hope you have a lovely day.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Leagues Cup returns to Columbus. Your reigning Leagues Cup champion Columbus Crew are hosting 3 matches at lower.com field. Come out and watch the crew take on teams from Liga MX, Toluca, Puebla, and León starting July 29th. Grab your tickets now at columbuscrew.com and watch the best in North America battle to keep the trophy at home in Columbus. No ties, only wins. Major League Soccer versus Liga MX. Leagues Cup returns to Columbus, Ohio. Be there.